Namo Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namo Vishnupadaya, Krishnapadaya, Buddhadaya, Shumari Bhaktivedanta Swami, Nithi Namane, Namaste, Sarasvati Devi, Gauravani, Pracharane, Narvasesha, Shunyavari, Pashtachade, Shuttarane, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar, Shivasati, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 57, Verse 34. Huh? 34. Iti vreda vachasrutva. Naita vad iha karanam. Iti madva samanaya. Apraha kuram janardana. Thus, Vrinda, of the elders, Avacha, words, Srutva, having heard, Na, not, Etavat, only this, Iha, in the matter at hand, Karanam, cause, Iti, thus, Matva, thinking, Samanaya, having him brought back, Praha, Seb, Akuram, to Akura, Janardana, Lord Krishna. Translation, hearing these words from the elders, Lord Janardana, though aware that the absence of Akura was not the only cause of the evil omens, had him summoned back to Dwarka and spoke to him. For a part, since Lord Krishna is the supreme controller, it was obviously by his will that certain troubles appeared in the city of Dwarka. Superficially, these evils may have been caused by Akura's absence, but also by the absence of the auspicious Shamantaka jewel. But we should recall that Dwarka is the eternal abode of Lord Krishna. It is a city of divine bliss because the Lord resides there. Still, to execute his pastimes as a prince of this world, Lord Krishna did the needful and summoned Akura. Lord Krishna honored Akura, greeted him confidently, and spoke pleasant words with him. Then the Lord, who was fully aware of Akura's heart by virtue of his being the knower of everything, smiled and addressed him. O Master of Charity, surely the opulent Shamantaka jewel was left in your care by Shatadanva and is still with you. Indeed, we have known this all along. Purport, Lord Krishna's treatment of Akura here confirms that he is actually a great devotee of the Lord. Since Satrajit has no sons, his daughter's son should receive his inheritance. They should pay for memorial offerings of water and pinda, clear their grandfather's outstanding debts, and keep the remainder of the inheritance for themselves. Purport, Srila Sridhar Swami quotes the following Smriti injunction regarding inheritance. Patni duhitaras chayava pitaro brataras tata tat suta gotraja bandhu sisya sa brahmacharina. The inheritance first goes to the wife, then, if the wife has passed away, to the daughters, then to the parents, then to the brothers, then to the brothers' sons, then to family members of the same gotra as the deceased, and then to his disciples, including brahmacharis. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti adds that since Satrajit had no sons, since his wives were killed together with him, and since his daughter, Satyabhama, was not interested in the Shamantaka jewel, which constituted the inheritance, it rightly belonged to her sons. In Krishna's Supreme Personality of God, Srila Prabhupada explains, Lord Krishna indicated by this statement that Satyabhama was already pregnant and that her son would be the real claimant of the jewel and would certainly take the jewel from her if he tried to conceal it. Nonetheless, the jewel should remain in your care, O trustworthy Akura, because no one else can keep it safely. But please show the jewel just once, since my elder brother does not fully believe what I have told him about it. In this way, O most fortunate one, you will pacify my relatives. Everyone knows you have the jewel, for you are now continually performing sacrifices on altars of gold. Purport, although technically Satyabhama's sons had a right to the jewel, Lord Krishna decided to leave the jewel in the care of Akura, who was using the jewel's wealth to continually perform religious sacrifices. Indeed, Akura's ability to perform such rituals on altars of gold was an indication of the jewel's potency. Thus, shamed by Lord Krishna's conciliatory words, the son of Svapalka brought out the jewel from where he had concealed it in his clothing and gave it to the Lord. The brilliant gem shone like the sun. Therefore, we can see in this chapter how a valuable jewel caused so much intrigue, violence, and suffering. This is certainly a good lesson for those who desire a trouble-free spiritual life. After the Almighty Lord had shown the Shamantaka jewel to his relatives, thus dispelling the false accusations against him, he returned it to Akura. Purport, for the second time, doubts about the Lord's reputation occasioned by the Shamantaka jewel are dispelled by the jewel itself. Indeed, for the second time, the Lord brought the jewel to Dwarka to establish his integrity there. This amazing series of incidents demonstrates that even when Lord Krishna descends to this world, there's a tendency for his peers to criticize him. The whole material world is infected by the fault-finding propensity. And in this chapter, the Supreme Lord demonstrates the nature of this undesirable quality. This narration, rich with descriptions of the prowess of Lord Sri Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of God, that removes sinful reaction and bestows all auspiciousness. Anyone who recites, hears, or remembers it will drive away his own infamy and sins and attain peace. Thus end the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, 57th chapter, Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Satrajit murdered and the jewel returned. So here we find the conclusion of this story, of which involves the Shamantaka jewel and how it was taken by the lion and then by Jambavan and then by Krishna. It was turned to Dwarka and then it was stolen by Satadhanva and given to Akura. Then Akura fled to Benares. Then here he's persuaded to come back and show the jewel to Krishna, and Krishna allows him to keep it finally. So as the commentaries said, you get a lot of intrigue and problems caused by the Shamantaka jewel, because its main quality was it yielded such quantities of gold. And because of that, people became greedy for it. In this way, we have a lesson to learn about the possession of material wealth. On the other hand, Krishna felt no desire for that particular jewel, though it had great powers. When he first heard about the jewel, he was unimpressed by it completely. And the only reason that he got the jewel is because people started rumors about him, because they were interested in the wealth. So in this way, Krishna demonstrated complete detachment from this. So this is one of the qualities of the Supreme Lord. Bhagavan has got six qualities, and one of them is vairagya, which means detachment. So he's not attached to anything in this material world. So here we have gold. How could the Lord be attracted to gold? The Lord is the source of all spiritual wealth as well as all material wealth. So there's no use for him in becoming attracted to gold. He has everything already. Simply by his very definition, the Lord possesses everything. He has all beauty, all wealth, all powers, etc. So he doesn't need anything. He is completely self-sufficient. So of course, in the spiritual world, we find that the Lord is not self-sufficient because he's controlled by bhakti. Bhakti controls the Lord. But that is again spiritual. And it's explained that, what is bhakti? It's the most essential essence of Pradini and Sambit Shaktis of the Lord, which are the Lord's Sarup Shakti. And the Sarup Shakti is responsible for manifestation of the spiritual world, manifestation of the form, qualities, and activities of the Lord, manifesting all the consciousness in the spiritual world and the rasas, and ultimately bliss with the Ladini section. So the best part of that Shakti is the Ladini and Sambit, which are make up bhakti. So naturally, the Lord would be attracted to that. It's his own Shakti. And so he's attracted to the devotees because they have this Shakti in them. Yes, the Lord is Vairagya. He is completely detached from everything. But he's very attached to his devotees. He's very attached to bhakti. And we'll have many stories in the Bhagavatam which illustrate this, how he is attracted to devotion, how he's controlled by his devotees, etc. Though the Lord has vairagya, that is in terms of material things. He doesn't want anything material. He's attracted to devotees. Devotees are spiritual. They manifest the Sarup Shakti of the Lord. Therefore, it's all spiritual, not material. So, therefore, the Lord can be attracted in that way, but he's not attracted to anything in this material world. What is everything in the material world? It is a byproduct of his external energy, not the internal energy. External energy.
Bahiranga Shakti. So the internal energy, the Antaranga Shakti, means that it is very intimately related with the Lord in the spiritual world. The Bahiranga Shakti indicates it's very separate from the Supreme Lord, even though he controls and possesses it. It's very separate from him, and is not much interested in it. Huh? And because of that, he relegates taking care of that Shakti to his Purusha avatar, Amsas, and then Brahma, and Devatas, and sages, etc. So that's not, it's not directly the Lord's interest, this material energy. So it's external to the Lord. And that external energy produces wealth and so many things in this material world. So though it is the Lord's energy, the Lord is not attracted to it in the sense that he is not bewildered by it and does not become overcome by a desire for it. We can say he's interested in it, yes. He must guide the material world in such a way that it elevates the jivas. So he does that through various ways. But he is not really interested in anything byproduct of this material energy. It's completely unlike the Supreme Lord. It is achit. The manifestations are temporary. It does not have any bliss in it. The Lord himself is what? Vijnana. He is conscious, completely conscious, full of knowledge. And he is full of bliss, ananda. And Prakriti is no consciousness, no knowledge, no bliss at all. So, very, very different. Why would he be interested in it? So, no, the Lord is not attracted to this at all. Here we have some gold, which produces more, the jewel that produces more and more gold every day. So that's all trivial for the Supreme Lord. He owns everything in the material world anyway. Why would he be attracted to gold? Possesses everything. We see that the Lord sometimes manifests the Vishwarupa, the universal form. So what does that mean? It means that everything is in the Lord. He possesses everything. It's part of him. So all the gold and jewels and buildings and properties and lands and elements, simply part of the Supreme Lord, and he can do with them as he wishes. So why should he become greedy for it, since he already owns it and controls it? So no, no attraction to this you hold at all. Other people, however, became attracted to it, like Satadanva. Therefore, we have this whole intrigue taking place because of the this attraction for material benefits. And it illustrates that some people are so attracted to material things, they don't appreciate the Supreme Lord at all. And so that's the case of Satadanva. He had no interest in the Lord at all. And finally, the Lord killed him. Now, he saw the Lord. He could associate with the Lord in Dwarka, but did not appreciate him at all. So very, very unfortunate. Instead, he was attracted to material wealth. We see Akur, on the other hand, was a great devotee. And even though he was involved in this intrigue for various reasons, he also was not very attracted to this gold. So when Krishna requested him to show it, he showed it willingly, and then Krishna said, keep it. He was a servant of the Lord, and he followed his order very nicely. Lord told him to return to Varanasi. He came back. Show the jewel. He showed the jewel. The Lord actually was very kind to him, in spite of his involvement in this intrigue. Therefore, he accepted him as his devotee and simply requested to see the jewel. That again shows the Lord was not really interested in the jewel at all. And then he gives the excuse here. Well, Balaram is suspicious of that, who has the jewel. So you should show it. People of Dwarka are puzzled who has the jewel. So you show it to everybody that you're in possession of it. So in this way, the rumors were annihilated. People stopped talking. And Krishna demonstrated his quality of not being attached to that jewel at all by the fact that he let Akura keep it, in spite of the fact he says, actually, it should go to the sons of Satyabhama. But anyway, Akura's got it, so let him keep the jewel. So in this way, he was gentle with his devotee and also showed his complete detachment from it, in spite of the fact that it caused so many problems in the kingdom. So in this way, the situation is resolved concerning this gem. Another comment here is that actually the Lord's abode is purely spiritual. So therefore, what real calamity can take place there? What trouble can take place? Not normal weather problems or other problems can take place because it's a spiritual kingdom. So if something appears like that, then we must take that as an arrangement of the Supreme Lord for his own purposes. So by making this arrangement of having so-called afflictions attack Dwarka, and people started saying, oh, Akura should come back. So therefore, this was an opportunity for Krishna to call Akura back. And in this way, the whole story was resolved. So, if there appears to be disturbances, actually, they're an appearance only. And it's not caused by the force of material elements at all. It's the will of the Supreme Lord. There's the later on we have the story of the destruction of Dwarka, where it goes under the water. The waves rise up and they swallow the whole city of Dwarka. That again is an appearance. So our acharyas say that actually the city of Dwarka is eternal. It is there. And in that city, the Yadus and Krishna are still having pastimes. There again we see that there's an appearance of a destruction, but actually the spiritual abode and its inhabitants cannot be disturbed at all by any of this. So when this happens, we take that as some arrangement of the Lord for certain purposes. So here we find these symptoms, but we should not imply that the city of Dwarka is therefore material because it gets afflicted by these various disasters. Rather, it's under the control of the Supreme Lord. So it's not a material activity at all. It's something to fulfill the Lord's purposes.
Can we understand all these pastimes are due to the Lord's sweet will? Because some of the pastime looks like an ordinary modern world. The jewels getting stolen and getting murdered. Even the Lord is present.
Well, there are many places like that in the Bhagavatam, in the story of Krishna. Krishna gets born in a prison, and then he gets smuggled out of the prison. And that's not an activity for God usually. He's born in glory or something like that, and it's Ramchandra or others, or it comes out of the pillar as Narasimhadev. It's Krishna particularly. He has a very different type of birth and activities, etc. We see that even Brahma gets bewildered that Krishna must be an ordinary living entity, not the Supreme Lord, because he acts like a small child, like a normal small child. So particularly in Vrindavan, Krishna is very bewildering for many people because he acts like a material person. And then later on in Dwarka, we also see that many activities are such that it appears that Krishna is material. There's the one story where the demon takes the head of his father and says, yeah, I've killed your father. And then Krishna begins crying like an ordinary living entity. But he actually knows the truth. And he's not attached because of material reasons. But he begins crying like an ordinary person. So in many ways, we find Krishna acts in an ordinary way. in relation to other persons, in relation to the circumstances, etc. But actually, he is Supreme Lord in all cases. And all of these apparently material type of responses to the world are there for certain purposes of his own. So we should never criticize the Lord and think he's doing things with a material, because of material influence. He's always fixed in his own rasa in the spiritual world.
You're explaining this, Krishna is not interested with this material world because he's one god. This is a very good detachment. Okay, what about this in the material world? What is happening? Is also considered like a pastimes of Mahavishnu. It's a material pastime of Mahavishnu. So is he attached with these pastimes? Because material also, we see this is eternal. It's always coming and going. If it's not eternal, although it is eternal, but there is a temporary manifestation. But if he is not at us, then why he is creating with this material world again and again?
Well, we can say that he does certain activities, like create the material world, etc. That is also considered to be a pastime of the Supreme Lord. So just as the Lord is attached to his devotees, he's also attached to his pastimes. Now, the pastime of creating the material world is slightly different from the pastimes in the spiritual world or in Vrindavan or Dwarka, etc. Because this is directly related to creation of the material world. Still, it is called a pastime of the Supreme Lord in terms of these amsas or the purushas. Because all the Lord's activities are spiritual, so they can never be material and they cannot have a material motive. So, what pleasure does the Lord get out of this pastime of creating the material world? Ultimately, the pleasure is that he can cultivate devotees in the material world. So he makes all sorts of arrangements for that with the appearance of bhakti and the holy name, manvantara avatars and manvantara manus within there, and appearance of scriptures, etc. So he makes arrangements so that people can advance and ultimately attain the Supreme Lord. That's when he becomes blissful. So ultimately the goal of the material world is to create bliss for the jiva when he goes to the spiritual world. So in that sense, a lila of the Lord.
The ultimate purpose is that to take the conditioned soul from material world to the spiritual world.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, it's a little bit difficult to understand because it's such an indirect, we can say, goal. But then we'll find that even in the shorter pastimes, for instance, the Battle of Kurukshetra, everyone was puzzled, why is this taking place? And even Bhishma says, we cannot understand what the Lord's plan is in all of this, the whole Mahabharata saga and how it was going on. There is a puzzle, but... And, you know, the Pandavas have to suffer for 13 years and whatever. So it causes a problem, and no one can understand it. Even the great devotees can't understand it. Finally, it concludes, and everyone says, oh, that's what the Lord meant. That's his plan. But when it's happening, it's very difficult for people to understand.
What about this, Maharaj? Here, when this Dwarakavasi had a doubt that Krishna might have, you know, hided this Samantika jewel, and they started criticizing Krishna. So can you say that this criticism is a spiritual criticism?
Well, of course it's not mentioned who, but we would assume that it was not the Yadus, not the devotees. It was other persons who were just like, you know, there, but just like we have Satrajit, and or we have Satadandva, who was actually very materialistic, who stayed there. And so there were other people also, common people who took up this sort of gossip or whatever. We shouldn't attribute to the great devotees or the Yadus.